It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources needs your help measuring the population of frogs and toads across the state. It's part of the annual Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey, which kicks off soon. We hear about the history of the survey, how you can get involved, and what we can all do to help these amphibians live their best lives in this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Have you previously taken part in the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey? If so, what was the experience like, and are you planning on doing it again this year? Do you come across various types of frogs or toads in your own property? What sightings have you had? And what questions do you have about frogs and toads in the state? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org. Or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Andrew Baji is a conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He coordinates the DNR's Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. Andrew, good morning. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
So the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey has been going on now for over 30 years. For those who are not familiar with the survey, what's it all about?
So the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey began back in kind of the early 1980s because of the back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, a lot of biologists and people began noticing certain species just started being less and less common throughout the state. And one of the ways that biologists and the DNR came together, as well as the universities, for example, University of Stevens Point, in Wisconsin, they came together and created this 10-site driving survey. And we basically put a bunch of sites and routes throughout the entire state. And from there, we can catalog all the 12 species of frogs and toads in the state by documenting, A, their occurrence, as well as their relative abundance through volunteers. And so that's been a really great and handy tool for us to use to document, again, those trends and distribution throughout the state and kind of see how they're actually doing over the past 30 years.
And what have we learned since the survey's creation in 1984?
Well, we have learned a lot about the actual distribution of all 12 species in the state. And so we've kind of figured out that mink frogs are found in the northern third of the state. Bullfrogs are pretty sporadic throughout the state. However, they're fairly uncommon, but over that 30-35 year existence, we've noticed kind of an increase in trends of bullfrogs. And I guess we've learned really a lot of stuff, and on top of it too, we've done a great job kind of doing more outreach and getting more people educated and involved with frog conservation in the state.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. The outreach, you use volunteers. Talk about how that works and how successful that's been.
Yes. So, again, the DNR back in the day, really, we only have a handful of employees that kind of focus on frog conservation efforts. And so we thought that the best way to monitor for frogs is to go out and listen for their breeding calls. And we thought that getting the citizens of Wisconsin more involved in that, A, they can really cover a lot more ground than we ever could as DNR employees. And so we kind of collaborated with again, the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point, and with a bunch of volunteers, and we've really been doing an exceptional job getting people involved and really interested in the program. So,
Andrew Baji is a conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He coordinates the DNR's Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. If you have questions about Wisconsin frogs and toads, if you've been a part of the survey before, talk about what your experience is like, please join us at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Andrew, tell us exactly how does the survey work, and are there different reporting periods depending on what kind of species you're looking for? How does this all work?
Yeah, so we have three different types of surveys currently going on. The first one I touched briefly on, but it's basically a 10 site route, and you basically drive to each route during the nighttime. Or sorry, during each site during the night, and you basically listen for each of the frogs and their abundances. And we have three different survey periods where you target three separate nights. And so the first period is early spring, where you're documenting more of the ephemeral wetland species like wood frogs, spring peepers, chorus frogs, and leopard frogs. And then we have two more periods, one kind of in the middle, which targets more of the tree frogs. And then the third period is out in the first half of July, and that actually targets more of our bullfrogs and our late season calling species like pink frogs and green frogs. And so, again, volunteers go to basically all those 10 sites three times during the year and kind of document all the different populations. Another project that we just started up last year that my colleague Rory Pulaski is heading up is our mink frog survey, and that was actually started again last year because we wanted to get a better idea of the actual distribution of that species, because this species calls really sporadically throughout the night as well as throughout the day, and so the traditional survey doesn't pick that up as well. In addition, the traditional survey doesn't always key in on that bog and lake habitat that mink frogs typically use. And so we have four different survey periods. However, we have volunteers go out to those 10 sites again, four different times, two times during the day and then also two times at night. And then while I'm on the subject, we also have another project too that kind of keeps track of our frog calling phonology from year to year. So volunteers will either choose a wetland in their backyard or kind of in their neighborhood, somewhere where they can easily access it as many times as possible throughout the year. And they basically just go to that site for five minutes up to one night a week or seven nights a week, and just document the seasonality of each of the species calling. And from there, the DNR can do basically can look at that phonology and kind of see how frogs are adapting or if they're not adapting to really early springs or really late springs, in addition to the normal springs we think of historically.
And how can our listeners get involved if they'd like to?
Well, the best way I would say, just to see if there's any open driving routes near you or those mink frog routes, would be to do a search online and search for Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. And from there, you can look at statewide maps and see which routes are nearby you that might be of interest. And on there, too, you can kind of look further at protocol and see if that's something that you have the time to do. And then also, you can email me at WFTS, so that stands for Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey, at wisconsin.gov, so WI.gov, and I can kind of help get you situated on something if you're interested.
Do you need any kind of experience or scientific background?
Well, you don't necessarily need to. I think the biggest thing is that you just have the ability to identify sounds well as that you have the passion to go in and learn the 12 different frog calls online and potentially through CDs or MP3 files. So to me, I'm not a really good birder, just because birds have a lot of calls. And so it's really quite easy for me to memorize 12 frog calls versus hundreds of bird calls. So I think it's a quite easy activity and fun to do.
Well, it sounds like it. I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be very interested in getting involved in this. We're going to continue our conversation with conservation biologist Andrew Badgey in just a moment as our Wisconsin weekend continues. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend this morning on the morning show, and we're talking about frogs and toads today and how you can get involved in helping to count them. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources needs your help in measuring for the population of frogs and toads across the state. It's part of the annual Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey, which kicks off very soon. We're learning about the history of the survey, how you can get involved, and what we can all do to help these amphibians live their best lives. Have you previously taken part in the Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey? If so, tell us what that experience was like. We'd like to hear your story. Planning on doing it again this year? Maybe you come across various types of frogs or toads on your own property. What sightings have you had? And what questions do you have about frogs and toads in the state? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Andrew Badgie is a conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He coordinates the DNR's Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. Andrew, some of us tend to lump frogs and toads together. What are the big differences between the two?
I would say toads tend to have more of that warty kind of appearance in back, and they have what are called parotoid glands, which kind of, when squeezed, can secrete a poisonous taste to it. And so technically, a lot of people's dogs might chew on a toad for a little bit, and after that first time, they'll realize that toads aren't really edible. And toads tend to hop, whereas frogs are bigger leapers. And so those are probably the two big easiest ways to identify a frog versus a toad, in my opinion.
Let's take a call. Lisa is with us from Racine. Lisa, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Oh, good morning. This survey sounds really exciting, and I'm glad you're having this program. And you just mentioned part of what I had a question about. I was wondering if there's any species of frogs or toads in Wisconsin which are poisonous. Like in Florida, they're having that epidemic of the frogs, and or they're coming in. I'm just wondering, like, if a dog does chew on the toad, would it make it sick, or would any other secretions harm a human through, you know, their contact with their skin?
Okay, Lisa, thanks for your question, Andrew.
Yeah, I've been told, I've never actually tried this, but I've been told if you're going to handle a toad, which is really our only species that I would be concerned about, like touching your eyes and touching your mouth with your hands after you touch a toad, I would avoid doing that just because there would be some sort of irritation. I don't necessarily think there'd be any level of hospitalization with that. However, they're mildly kind of toxic, and again, most dogs typically just kind of get a bad taste in their mouth and just avoid toads afterwards. So, that would be our only toxic species, but it's not that toxic compared to other species in the tropics.
Lisa, thanks so much for your call. Andrew, how many different species of frogs and toads call Wisconsin their home?
Well, we have 11 different species of frogs, and I won't label all of them off just for time, but and then we also have one species of toad, and actually we just documented out in the area of La Crosse County, we documented a second toad, which is called the Fowler's toad, and that one looks a lot like our American toad, but has a different breeding call. And I say we documented it, we're pretty certain that it's a non-native species. However, right now we technically only claim to have one native toad.
As the temperatures get warmer and we start to ease into spring, which frogs emerge first?
Typically, the first two that emerge or start calling throughout the year are chorus frogs, boreal chorus frog, and then the spring peeper. And those are typically really the species in Wisconsin that are associated with spring. And then shortly thereafter, there's a species called the wood frog, and all three of these species are all considered ephemeral or seasonal wetland species, and so they'll lay their eggs really early in the year in these ephemeral ponds that fill up from all the snow melts or spring rains, and then they quickly metamorph, at least the eggs and larvae do, into little adults by the time those wetlands dry up. So those are typically the really early species that you'll hear calling right away, and we'll probably be hearing more and more frogs starting to call in the next 1 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, the peeper frogs. That's to me, that's the real first sign of actual spring, when you hear the peepers. And it's so nice if you live where there are some. Keep the windows open at night maybe a little bit and you can hear those. It puts me right to sleep. Let people know again how to get in touch with the show, 800-642-1234. We're talking about the annual Toad and Frog Survey. Wisconsin DNR needs your help. If you'd like to volunteer, that would be a really cool thing to do. Andrew Bodgy is with us. He is a conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and coordinates the DNR's Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. Tom is with us in Burlington. Tom, good morning.
I have a place I go, and it's in the country, and there's water, and I see that there's a frog there that makes a noise, and I think he gives himself away. There's herons there too that are walking around, and they stand around like statues, and I wonder is he giving himself away, and are they going to get him, or who gets you know, is it dangerous for this guy to be out there making that noise?
So do these frogs give themselves away by calling out?
You know, that's definitely one of the hazards of breeding season. You make yourself, or these male frogs make themselves more noticeable and attractive to females that are coming to these wetlands. However, at the same time, yes, they are making themselves more noticeable for herons and raccoons and other animals higher up in the food chain that do eat them. So some of the ways that they do kind of conceal themselves, though, are when they do notice wildlife are closer, they tend to call less, and some of them really just stop calling or hide pretty well in the vegetation or the lily pads and kind of conceal themselves under the water quite a bit too. So they have a bunch of different strategies, as well as they're really good leapers if they're calling from land or nearby too. So they have some strategies, but yes, there are definitely a lot of frogs out there, and as a result, they kind of make up the base of the food chain for a lot of these other animals.
What can we be doing all year long to help protect frogs and toads in places like our parks or in our own backyards?
Some of the bigger ones, typically, because frogs and toads are all associated with wetlands for breeding, and some of them are year-round. In those wetlands and lakes and rivers too. The biggest things that I would say is just kind of minimize the impacts that you have with wetlands and kind of lake disturbance along the edges. Usually it's good to leave kind of a little bit of a buffer strip on the edges of these waterways. That way the frogs can have somewhere to hide. And in addition to if you're going to be using pesticides or insecticides and stuff like that kind of near the water's edge, just make sure that you're kind of concentrating it on whatever you need to spray versus just widespread application. That way it's not getting into the waterway in mass quantities, in addition to using types of spray that break down easily in water. So you can see all that stuff on the labels too, but those are really the best ways to conserve them. And then I also know in the summertime, a lot of people report to me just frogs kind of in their lawn. And so when you are mowing your lawn, just be careful that there might be a lot of frogs jumping. And I know sometimes there's so many that it's really hard to avoid and get your lawn mowed at the same time. But just be cognizant that there could be frogs nearby on your lawn while you're mowing.
Let's take another call here. Doug is with us in Trevor. Doug, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I listened to your show. Hey, I started hearing them. I'm down in Kenosha County on Tuesday. I first started hearing the peepers. And, you know, in the spring, you know, we get the warm weather, they get going, and then get the cold, they shut down. I went out to get my paper this morning, 37 degrees, 5:30 in the morning. They're out there peeping. Yeah. And I just caught the thing about the cutting the lawn. We have those ephemeral ponds in the property and around, and yeah, there's some years I slow down with my lawnmower, but you know, you can only walk so slow, and I'm not kidding you, 50, 80, maybe 100 in a quarter acre lot, and then little spring, I think they're spring peepers, they're about an inch long, two stripes down their back, maybe they're chorus frogs, I don't know, but depending on the year, it's just nuts. But you got to cut your grass, so you go slow as fast as you can. They're like mosquitoes, just like jumping out of the way, trying to get out of the way from the lawnmower. But yeah, anyway, I just my observation, they're peeping away down here in Kenosha County. It's great.
Thanks a lot, Doug. First sign of spring in Wisconsin, the peepers show up. Andrew, what about Doug's observation that that's a good sign the peepers are back?
Yeah, definitely. That is actually the first report I've heard in the state of spring peepers. We've had a handful of chorus frog calls throughout kind of that southeast corner of the state, the south central part. And then as far north as Polk County, I've heard chorus frogs calling. So yeah, it's really cool. And one thing that I do want to touch on that he mentioned is some of these frogs really come out early in spring when it warms up, and then we get hit with some winter storms. And actually, these frogs have pretty high levels, even in early spring, of glucose. And that glucose acts as an antifreeze. And so they can kind of survive those winter bouts.
Okay. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Had a blast.
Andrew Badgy is conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He coordinates the DNR's Wisconsin Frog and Toad Survey. It's Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. Coming up, we'll meet our new tourism secretary. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. This is the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin may be America's Dairyland, but it's also where millions of tourists come to play every year, making it one of the state's biggest economic drivers. As this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend continues, we'll meet Governor Toni Evers, Tourism Secretary Designee, and hear about her vision for the future of Wisconsin tourism. Do you live in a part of Wisconsin that's deserving a little more attention from tourists? Why do you think that, and what's so special about it? Call in and tell us. What are some hidden gems in Wisconsin that you think could use a little more marketing, and how would you like to see that play out? What are some of the challenges you see facing tourism in Wisconsin, and what do you want to say to the Tourism Secretary Designee about your hopes for the state? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sarah Minney is the Tourism Secretary Designee of the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me, John. I'm happy to be here.
So let's just start out with your vision for your new role in tourism for the state of Wisconsin. What are the biggest goals that you hope to achieve for the state?
Well, that's a really big question, John. In the scheme of things, you know, what we know about Wisconsin tourism is a really positive story. Wisconsin has a wonderful reputation for very high quality tourism experiences. The consumer data that we have available to us and that is available, to states across the country tells us that consumers perceive Wisconsin to be a really wonderful place to go and relax and unwind. So the good news is what we have is, you know, almost markets itself, but what it doesn't do is actually market itself. So the good news is, you know, people really like and have a wonderful experience when they come to Wisconsin. But what we also learned from research is that we have a few opportunities to grow even further compared to our counterparts in, you know, other areas of the Midwest. We rely very heavily, more heavily than an average Midwest state, on an older traveler. And while that is wonderful to have a very strong base of very consistent visitation, we want to look to the future to understand where is the next generation of, dedicated and loyal traveler going to come from. We also know we have an opportunity to grow in the category of people of color. We actually are significantly behind the U.S. average as well as the region in attracting people of color. And we're also very heavily dependent on the direct drive market. Over 90% of people arrive to Wisconsin by their own personal vehicle. And that just tells us that we have an opportunity to look further afield. We know people are coming from other places, and we think there's a great opportunity to attract more people for the reasons that people love Wisconsin already. Ultimately, the goal is drive economic growth and prosperity for all Wisconsinites through increasing our tax revenue base. So I think big picture, we have a lot of opportunities to do that.
You grew up in Wisconsin. You attended UW-Madison. And prior to your new role in the Department of Tourism, you headed up marketing efforts at Milwaukee Film. How do you see that helping you as heading into this your new job as tourism secretary?
Well, you know, all of us in Wisconsin are actually also Wisconsin tourists. So I think we all have a bit of a perspective on what's so fantastic about the state. But I guess what I would say I bring to the position is a career that is built on marketing strategy. When I came into the role, I did what I'm very familiar doing. I dug into the data. I asked a lot of questions. I asked questions that we don't necessarily have the answers to yet. And I see that as an opportunity to find those answers and, kind of put together the puzzle of where we can go next and how we can succeed in growing. So quite a bit of my background is actually kind of on the advertising agency side of things, strategic communications, content strategy, and general marketing communication strategy. So really that's where my strong suit is, identifying opportunities for growth, sort of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for that growth, and putting together plans and programs to address that and drive success. So quite a bit of that time was also spent in the tourism and travel and active lifestyle space. So, you know, to me, it feels a bit like second nature, although the daily routine is a bit different when you work as a member of the cabinet for the state of Wisconsin. But what I have seen is that I think my experience translates quite directly. And then I also get to learn and have exciting adventures along the way.
Sarah Minnie is the tourism secretary designee for the Wisconsin Department of Tourism. And we'd like to hear your Wisconsin tourism ideas this hour, 800-642-1234. We have a suggestion, I think, from Ben, who's calling us from Madison. Ben, good morning.
Travel. I always look for a city where I can be on a bike because it's better for my health, it's more enjoyable, it's less expensive, and I'd rather see a city from behind handlebars than looking through a car window and stuck in traffic. Madison is great for this, and I'd love to see it boosted more, pushing the benefits of just being out and being free. And for the 6 months or so when the weather is nice, you really can't beat it.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot. Ben wants to see more promotion of bicycling, particularly in Madison.
Yeah, well, so Ben, I guess one of the things I'd love to weigh in on that, the good news for Ben and other people who love the outdoors in Wisconsin, one of the proposals that we have on the table, both through the governor's budget, but actually also through a strategic initiative, is the creation of an Office of Outdoor Recreation. And what that really means is we would galvanize the individuals and the organizations and the private industry and government behind those things that are already a strength in Wisconsin. The number one marketable reported reason people come to Wisconsin or travel in Wisconsin is to participate in outdoor recreation, with biking included. So this is something that we see as a very important priority for our growth plans. And it's really something that I think people are getting very excited about. We have an incredibly rich natural resource base in the state, but it also is exactly what Ben is saying. It actually drives, community development and strength, and it promotes healthy and active lifestyles. It's good for everyone to have more active communities and to spend more time outside. So I think that's a great suggestion. So I appreciate Ben calling in.
Ben, thanks for your call. There's a place for you on the morning show here at 800-642-1234. Sarah, you've said that you think Wisconsin can do more to attract millennials and people of color. How do you think the tourism department can do more to reach these populations?
That's a great question. Well, and the answer is not an easy one. It actually is going to be a lot of layers of different activities. We do know a lot about how various consumers consume and find information related to planning their travel, their travels and their vacations. So what we do know is we have an opportunity to dig into the creation of more targeted content specifically for those audiences, and it's not as straightforward as, We just have to find where those young folks are and talk to them there. We need to do it in a way that's authentic and meaningful and memorable and to rise above the noise. In marketing, our biggest challenge is often rising above the noise and being memorable and making an impact on an audience. So there's a lot of channels where that can be more effective. We see both social media, but also, you know, digital and video content is one of the most targetable channels for attracting any audience. What we have to know, though, is what is it they're looking for and how do they plan their trips? And in order to do that, we need to give them resources and information to make it easier for them to choose Wisconsin instead of our competition.
And we're talking with Sarah Meany, who is the tourism secretary designee, coming in to take over our Wisconsin tourism department, Wisconsin tourism being one of the biggest industries in the state, and we're wondering what you think. Let's take a call from Laura next in the Fox Valley. Laura, good morning.
Good morning. I'm so excited to talk to you about this because this is something I feel very strongly about. That Wisconsin really needs to get in the plant-based food scene. Milwaukee's doing a great job, but even Madison. I'm a vegan and so is my daughter, and we go to Madison, and there's maybe one place that's fully vegan in the whole town of Madison.
Laura, thanks for that. So Laura says we need more vegan options around the state.
Well, I think that's an interesting, you know, idea and an interesting concept. I know a new vegan restaurant just opened up in Milwaukee, and people are praising it heavily. And in the scheme of things, you know, Laura is getting at something that's really important, which is, you know, the cultural tourism that people want to experience when they choose a destination. And while, you know, a vegan restaurant alone is an example of that type of, you know, an attraction in a destination, we do know that Wisconsin has an incredible history and culture of culinary leadership. It goes far beyond our leadership in, you know, high quality cheese, of course, which is something that we're very well known for around the world. But we also have an incredible number of James Beard Award winners in our state or nominees. But we also, you know, and in the scheme of things, people love to experience the farm to table experience that Wisconsin is also very strong for. That's something that we are looking into as well. I've had conversations with the Secretary of Tourism, Brad Paff, who he and I both see several pathways to creating agritourism. So, you know, Laura speaks of plant-based food, but also the idea that fresh farm-raised food, unprocessed food, and the experience of food from the point of, you know, its creation or, you know, conception to our opportunity to eat it. I think this is something that, you know, we being in, you know, an agriculture, you know, cultural center of the country is a huge opportunity. And it's certainly something that drives interest already. And we are definitely looking into that.
Our Wisconsin Weekend Conversation with Sarah Meany, Wisconsin's Tourism Secretary Designee, continues. You can join that conversation at any time by calling 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. On this week's edition of Wisconsin Weekend, Wisconsin's Tourism Secretary Designee Sarah Meany is with us to talk about her goals for the Department of Tourism and the state of Wisconsin and how she's leveraging her background to raise Wisconsin's profile as a destination. Lots of phone calls coming in. Let's see how many we can get to before we have to go away. We'll start with Heidi in Wauwatosa. Heidi, good morning.
Hi, one thing I would like to see is I would like to see more of an emphasis on what differentiates Wisconsin from other states. We do a lot of traveling as a family, so I'm always looking at travel magazines and guides. And I've noticed with the last few ads that I've seen for Wisconsin that they look like they could happen anywhere. And Wisconsin has lots of great areas, ranging from the Apostle Islands to Milwaukee's Art Museum to Door County. So I think that it would be nice to have more of an emphasis on the things that are different about Wisconsin.
Heidi, thanks a lot so much for that call. That seems like a kind of a challenge because a lake in Michigan maybe looks like a lake in Minnesota or, you know.
Well, and Heidi makes an excellent point, which is ultimately that is the name of the game. We need to give people more reasons to consider Wisconsin over the competitor. And while it's true that many things that people can experience in Wisconsin look and or feel like something they could do elsewhere, ultimately, it has to be the whole experience that drives that inspiration. And Heidi named several things that are quite unique to Wisconsin. But, you know, every total experience really needs to feel uniquely Wisconsin. We do have information and data that tells us how people feel about the difference between Wisconsin and similar Midwest states or things that would, to an untrained eye, look very similar. People do comment that Wisconsin feels more family-friendly. It feels very safe to travel around Wisconsin. And that in Wisconsin, there's a truly authentic, warm, welcoming feeling that isn't quite the same experience in our neighboring states. So some of those things are absolutely what we look to infuse in how we put Wisconsin, you know, in the front of people's minds. But ultimately, it really is about the wide variety of experiences that people want. And, of course, not everyone wants the same thing. So we need to give people enough reasons to consider and put together their own itinerary, which is why we actually built the TravelWisconsin.com website to do that, where people can find what is unique to them or uniquely interesting for them and put together an itinerary and a plan for things that actually pique their interests.
Heidi, thanks so much for that call. Let's go next to Brad in Madison. Brad, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Good morning. I'd like to point out that Frisbee Disc Golf is a presence in Wisconsin. There's over 325 public courses, and there's a growing number of resorts that offer quality disc golf. There is over 60 sanctioned tournaments that take place on many of these courses, and that's just the tip of the iceberg of players compared to all the recreational players that are here. We do offer tournaments that do draw both regional and national players. So I think we are a player in tourism.
Brad, thanks so much for that. Disc golf becoming a lot more popular. That's one point. The second point is raise the golf issue. We've got the Ryder Cup coming to Sheboygan County.
Yes, we do. So, you know, the points he is making are really good ones. And it is that Wisconsin actually is a very popular and very in-demand destination for outdoor and sports tournaments. We're very competitive when it comes to the resources and the locations for things like that. And a lot of that has to do with the quality of our outdoor space. Our county parks, our state parks, our national forests, those are all really very much very attractive to people and draw people in. That kind of goes hand in hand with outdoor recreation. The idea that the wide variety of things people can do and that people are looking for really does play into what makes Wisconsin a really, really desirable destination. We're actually leading the Midwest in terms of outdoor recreation as a base, and it drives about 85% of our total tourism economy is directly related to outdoor recreation. So the other point he makes, though, too, is that when people come into town for the first time, when people come into Wisconsin for the first time for things like Ryder Cup or for, you know, a disc golf tournament, for example, when they arrive in Wisconsin for the first time, that is our opportunity to convert them to lifetime advocates. And when people arrive to Wisconsin for the first time, they are largely delighted and surprised with what the amazing experience actually is for them. The hardest thing for us to do as a Department of Tourism is to get people to come here for the first time. Once they are here for the first time, we know that we can convert them to huge advocates and, you know, fans of Wisconsin. The Ryder Cup is a great example of, you know, once in a lifetime or certainly once in a decade opportunities for people from around the globe to be introduced to Wisconsin in a way they might never have considered coming as a tourist. Again, another example would be the DNC. It's not always so much about the people that are here for that specific event, while that is an important piece of it and that drives a lot of the economy and a lot of dollars to our state, it's also about the media coverage that happens before and during those events, where we are on a national or international stage being talked about, and we have an opportunity to frame that conversation and really give people a positive impression and make hay while the sun shines. So that's a big piece of how we're planning ahead for those big events coming in 2020.
Brett, thanks so much for your question. Karen in Green Bay, you'll be next. Karen, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. I have an interesting point of view. I have an Airbnb, and I have had many guests, foreign guests from France, England, Canada. They fly into Chicago. They rent a car. They come up the east side of Wisconsin and then go north through Michigan and then down on the western side of Michigan back to Chicago. So, and I'm amazed at how many are doing this. And what I would like to suggest is maybe instead of viewing Illinois and Michigan as quote-unquote competitors, maybe joining with them to create sort of a three-state experience.
And all right, Karen, we're almost out of time. Karen, thank you so much for that. We should join forces and maybe work with some other states to get more people to come to both places.
And Karen's got the right idea. We are actually a member of an organization called Great Lakes USA, and we work together with the Great Lakes states and regions, including the Mississippi River states, to do exactly that, especially when it comes to international marketing, and attracting visitors from further afield. To them, one state versus another isn't really the point. It's what's the experience they can have around the Great Lakes. So, yes, we are a member of that consortium. We participate heavily in that. And the itinerary she described is not uncommon. People want to experience multiple states and see kind of the bigger picture. It's a great way to make sure people are introduced to the region in the United States and can experience, a really large swath of the natural and built environment when it comes to tourism. So I think she's on the right track, and we're going to keep doing that as well.
Karen, thanks so much for your call. Sarah, what's on your Wisconsin travel list this summer?
Oh, that's a great question. So we just had our annual tourism industry conference, was it only last week? And one of the things I challenged myself and the entire industry to do is what I'm calling the Wisconsin Curiosity Challenge. And what I'm asking all of us to imagine is, what's a place in Wisconsin where you've never been? Even for those of us who work in the travel and tourism industry in the state, go to a place that you've never been. Go and explore it with curiosity, and then send a postcard to the Department of Tourism and tell us about what that experience is. And so all of us took on that challenge. I'm looking forward to seeing what people will do. I have a couple things on my list. I'd really like to explore the Great River Road on the western side of the state in a way that I haven't before. And I think that'll be a lot of fun to do with my kids and my husband and take that in. It's a really beautiful part of the state, but giving it the time and energy mm-hmm. that it deserves, I think, is on my list. But that's the plan.
Okay, well, enjoy. There's lots to do and see in our great state of Wisconsin. Sarah Meany, thank you so much for being with us this morning. Sarah Meany is Wisconsin's tourism secretary designee. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.